Welcome back to Jay's Real World Podcast. Today's episode, Scroggy Southern Comfort. Three amazing guests today. Marissa Kuzer donated her kidney to friend David Scroggins in August 2019. Tragically, they were only able to celebrate for just one day after surgery. David had major complications. He eventually lost his gift of life and was just soon fighting for his life. David, a double amputee and wheelchair bound, however, isn't letting that stop him. He's gone through so much. He's had so many obstacles. He's an amazing, positive person. And with the help of his community and friends, he's going for his dream. He's already an accomplished chef for 20 years. Multi-talented person who's a singer and does community theater and does so many things, but his passion for cooking and being a chef is finally coming to fruition. We're going to all support and help him in this cause. You're going to hear an amazing interview today, and you're going to hear from Marissa. You're going to hear from David. It's a very emotional and intimate conversation. And we're also going to meet Bryce Finkelday, who is now David's business partner in their food truck, which is going to be constructed, specially fitted, wheelchair accessible, and hopefully 1 year from now will be a reality. So I really hope that you listen and enjoy this episode for its real depth and heartwarming and inspirational message of an incredibly strong man with a positive outlook and an amazing woman who not only decided to be a living kidney donor, but is supporting and continues to support her friend David in the mission to create Scroggy's Southern Comfort Food. Already a website, the menu has already been created. You can look in the show notes and you'll see a link to their website, GoFundMe page, Facebook page, Instagram. It's all there in the show notes. Please take a look. I'd like you to check it out. Please consider supporting this amazing man on his amazing mission. Thank you so much, Marissa, David, and Bryce for joining me. Here's the episode. So everybody, welcome to Jay's Real World Podcast. And just really great for you to be here. Bryce Finkelday is here. He's the, tell us who you are.
I'm the co-owner of Scroggy's. I'm running the whole business aspect of it and helping David along on his journey.
Maybe you could explain how you met, like how you got connected with David. And then I want to go on to Marissa to start.
Sure. Yeah. Well, my mom and David actually went to high school together and have been best friends for over 20 years. And so really growing up, I would go see David in Topeka. And especially when he began having a lot of health issues, my mom would visit him very frequently in the hospital and I would go with him. And so through frequent hospital visits, we've had a lot of time to connect and get to know each other. And I really share his dream and his passion for this. And I was very excited and happy that he was decided that it was time for him to finally open a food truck because he'd been talking about it for a very, very long time.
It's amazing. And I was saying in the beginning about just coming across Marissa, maybe you want to introduce yourself, Marissa, and just tell a little bit about yourself leading up to the story while waiting for Dave.
Yeah. So my name is Marissa Kuzer. I grew up in Topeka and I met David through my husband. My husband and him were in community theater together and became very good friends through that. And so I guess regarding the kidney donation, I had a cousin when I was pretty young, probably early high school days, who was on the kidney registry and received a kidney. And I just thought that it was so cool that that's something that, you know, medical technology allows us to do. And I thought it was a cool concept that, you know, you don't necessarily need both of your kidneys, that one kidney can grow to compensate the other. And I was an avid blood donor at the time. I tried to donate every time I was eligible to do so. And so I just knew early on that this was something that would be really neat for me to be able to do at some point. And so when I found out that David had been put on the kidney registry, I was like, you know, well, I'm probably not going to be a match, but might as well see, might as well, you know, get the little test and see. And so from there, things just kept growing and getting more serious until we got to our approval and donation, which was also in 2019.
Wow. When was the actual date of your transplant?
It was August of 2019. I don't know if I can remember the exact date. August. David probably knows.
So
18th, maybe.
So it was really the connection through your husband,
mm-hmm.
and the community theater. The connection with the cooking, it was the theater. So that's how you got to know David through the community theater. Yeah. And your husband. There he is. Hey, there he is. We were just.
Hi, David.
Marissa was just getting into the story of how she met you or got to know you through her husband and the theater, right? Mm-hmm. What were you doing in the theater? Were you singing, acting? What was your background?
I was at the time we were doing a musical theater, Memphis, and we had gotten to the last weekend for the show. And I just wasn't feeling very well. And I knew I wasn't feeling very well. And my thought was, as soon as this show is over, you know, I had three more shows. As soon as this show is over, I'll call my doctor on Monday and let's find out what's going on. And we just never made it that far.
Wow. But how long had you known each other up until that point, that you and Marissa's husband? Like, how far did you guys go back?
Marissa had married one of my good friends. So we, at that point, Marissa, we had known each other 2-3 years.
At the point that Memphis happened, it was probably about 2 years. So you and Daniel, you met in Little Shop of Horrors, right?
Right.
What year was that?
Oh, that's funny that you would think I know those things.
I remember my husband said that you would always end up getting the roles that he wanted. But he was going through a hard time for a while before I met him. And he said David just reached out to him and was like, hey, you know, you're saying some things online that are a little concerning. Do you want to talk to somebody? And I'm sure you can speak to that better than me, but yeah. I know that was a moment that my husband, Daniel, he holds in high regard for, like, he needed somebody and David was there to reach out.
Can you take us back to that, David? Take us back a little bit to what was going on with you, like, even up to that point, leading up to that, like, personally on your health journey, just people are sort of going to want to know, like, what was going on and what led up to that point, you know, where you were. Take us back.
I've been diabetic for several years. And like I said, we were doing a community theater show that usually, and the shows for the our community theater typically run for four to five weeks. And I knew I had started getting tired and things like that. But then I started in the last 2 weeks of the run of the show, I realized I started having swelling, like in my legs and things like that. And you know, my joints kind of started hurting. I just kind of knew something was wrong. I was associating it a little bit to, I'm in horrible theater shoes, you know, they're not made for comfort or anything else. They're made to kind of continue a style. And I thought, well, maybe that's it. And, you know, so every, you know, night I was going home and raising my legs and things like that. But I did know that, you know, I just wasn't feeling all that great. So the night before the last weekend, so that Wednesday night, I went over to my mother's house and was just like, I don't feel very well. I'm going to sleep over here. I went to, you know, to go to sleep in one of her extra bedrooms and woke up and just, I was having hot flashes and then I was super cold and I was sweating a lot. And she said, okay, we're going to the hospital. And so I went to the hospital like late Wednesday night into Thursday morning. And the doctor came in and she said, your kidneys have shut down. They've just shut down. And we need to get you on dialysis and we need to get you on dialysis right now. And my response to what my mother still makes fun of me is, was, but I have a show.
Dedication.
Right. And I said, how about this? I'll go do my show this weekend and then I'll come see you. And she said, I'm not too sure that you'll make it. And you may fall out on stage. We need to start you on dialysis immediately. And that's kind of what started this rather vicious ball rolling.
What year was that? Just give a sense of that point, at that point.
This was March of 2016.
2016, okay. And at that point, as for your vocationally, you were doing the theater, but what were you doing vocationally in addition?
I was a cook, and have been for several years. I actually attended college as a vocal performance major.
Okay.
But then kind of discovered that my talent was more in being a fat kid that liked food. And so that's kind of what I was doing. I was the kitchen manager for a small deli that was actually going out of business. And so I had just lost my job 2 months, 3 months before all of this had happened.
Wow. And at that point, their connection with Marissa and her husband, tell me your husband's name again, Marissa.
It's Daniel, but David knows him probably as Kuzer.
Kuzer, okay. I like that. So 2016, all the medical stuff happened, but just how long before that had you been connected with Kuzer?
I've been connected with Kuzer for a while. Marissa said, we knew each other from the theater.
Yeah.
We were doing a show together and like she said, he was going through some stuff and I think I reached out and I believe my term was more like, I think you need to drink and I don't mind tequila and you don't mind tequila. So let's take care of whatever issues are going on. And just kind of a budding friendship from there. Just kind of kept in touch and gone, you know, growing friendships, and that's how it's kind of gone from there.
So you had this special connection for a while. And Marissa, yeah. You knew David kind of personally or just through some social engagements or?
Mostly through that. So I remember when my husband and I first started dating, we'd probably been dating for a couple months. And one day he just woke up and he goes, it's time for you to meet my best friend. And I go, what? And he goes, I need to call David because he needs to meet you. And so we went and had pizza and ice cream that night. And I did my best to make a good impression. And then I remember my husband texted him afterwards and said, okay, so what did you think? And he said, well, the pizza was okay.
You guys, but I mean, you know, it's really a very, you know, being part of like, you know, being a going through myself, kidney failure, dialysis, and wondering, you know, and thinking about the possibility that I might, you know, find a donor. It's a very daunting and very scary thing, you know, just personally, and that you then were confronted with this kidney failure situation, right? And then you went on to dialysis right in 2016, right?
Right.
That's when.
Yeah.
And so your life was, were you on to, what was that like for you, right on to hemodialysis, like in a center, or what happened, like medically?
Yeah, I immediately went into center hemodialysis. I did hemodialysis for about a year, actually a year and a half. And then in late 2017, the beginning of 18, they came to me about the possibility of doing peritoneal dialysis.
Okay.
And so at that point, I had moved into my mother's basement, which was the only way that I could have done peritoneal dialysis for the amount of supplies that you need for peritoneal dialysis. There's just a lot of supplies.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just for the audience that may not be familiar, hemodialysis was like you're going into a center and you have needles, right? And your blood is going through the
hemodialysis machine. Hemodialysis is the concept where there's two needles that they, you know, they put in your arm, and pretty, you know, daunting process. It's about, well, for me, it was about 3 hours, and one needle pulls the blood out of your system and it goes into a machine and cleans it. And then the second needle puts it back in. Peritoneal dialysis, they surgically insert a port into your stomach. And it's a slightly smaller machine that you typically do at night while you're asleep. And you hook this machine up, and there are dialysates. It's a chemical solution that they have, and there's several bags. And what the machine does is the machine takes this chemical, and it puts it into this port into your stomach, and then it sits there for a while. And then when it pulls it back out, it pulls out all the impurities and things that it would do, sort of like hemodialysis, but without the blood.
Thank you for explaining that. I just, you know, it's interesting for people who have limited knowledge, not being involved in it. And you did a great job of explaining that. What happened? So you were on hemodialysis for a period of time, right? For how long? And then
I did it for about a year and a half. And then I started on the peritoneal dialysis. And I was on peritoneal dialysis until it was late in 18 when Marissa called and said, I've always wanted to give a kidney. And I said, oh, well, that's nice of you. Great. She was like, I kind of want to give you my kidney. And I didn't have anything to say to her for a good 2 or 3 minutes. It was just kind of more of an And if you know me very well, you know I'm never short for words. So she started what, you know, seemed like a very daunting process. And we started texting back and forth, and she'd be like, oh, I've got to do this test and I've got to do that test. And, you know, what was even more interesting in the story for us is that at the time, Marissa and Kuzer were living in Chicago. So she was doing all of this from great distances. And, you know, Messenger kind of became our best friend of her telling me how many vials of blood they took from her, or, you know, how many urine tests she had to do and things like that. Connection had to be from far.
Up until that point, had you considered a living donor? Had that even been...
Absolutely not.
Had you shared your story with anyone?
I have some really great theater friends. And so when I, a year after my initial kidney shutdown, my theater friends threw a huge fundraising concert of singers and performers and all kinds of things. And, you know, packed out the place, and we were, you know, initially just trying to raise money not so much to look for donors, but just to pay for, you know, all the mounting medical bills that I had at that point. Because like I said, I had just kind of lost my job. But the idea of finding a donor was never even, I didn't even mention that to people. I just thought, I'm going to put on the list. When there's something, you know, random, it'll show up.
Had you engaged? Yeah, that's up until that point, I feel very, I have a very feeling of a connection with you, because I didn't tell anyone that I was in need. I didn't even tell anyone that I was on dialysis that I worked with. So it's very, like, I can't believe now how I'm like 3 years post-gent that I'm actually so out there encouraging people, if I could just say that, to do the total opposite. It would be to share your story, you know? So that's why I was curious about asking that. And you're such a warrior, you know, of a person, and such strength and everything you are just in life, you know, that I could see that, you know, not that I was a warrior, but just that I was so secretive about it. But I was going to ask you, at what point did you engage? Our dialysis journeys kind of overlapped almost exactly in time. When I started what I was doing, our journeys sort of chronologically or on the calendar or whatever. But at what point did you engage with the transplant center? I'm just curious, to be evaluated, to be listed. At what point did that happen for you?
They came to me day 3 of my day at the center, getting okay. Getting dialysis. They just said, you know, okay, your next step is to get you, you know, on the list. And that's when they informed me that they said, you know, we can't officially put you on the list, but you get credit for,
yes,
you get time credit, I guess, is the best way to do it.
For every day.
The moment that you started dialysis.
That's a law.
And that helped. That helped my motivation. Now, I didn't actually get put on officially, you know, get okay to be on the list until mid-17, so the summer of 2017. It took about a year before I was actually on the list.
And then at that point, you really weren't thinking, oh, I'm going to try to find a living donor. That wasn't really something that you were actively thinking about, even though you were listed.
My mindset was stuck on the idea that someone would, you know, be at the end, or some, you know, tragedy would happen in someone else's life. And that is how I would get a kidney. The idea of getting it from someone else was never even a thought process.
And then Marissa contacts you then. And that was in 2018, Marissa, that you contacted?
Maybe late 2017. Oh, late 2017. Okay. I think it was almost a year of testing before I was approved. It was a very long process.
What were you thinking and feeling during that time? Marissa first, and then I'm going to go back to Dave.
At the time, I was honestly just surprised at how much testing went into it. You know, I guess in my mind, I was like, well, I've got a kidney, so get to it. You know, I had in my mind like, oh, well, I could probably take some vacation in February. and it took nearly a year instead. But it was just a long process. They want to make sure that you're as healthy as possible. And so if there's like any medical history, they need to check out. So I met with a heart specialist. I had a CT scan and MRI. I was living in Chicago downtown. I had no car. And so my initial testing, I had to go to a hospital. I had this like box of these vials of blood, and I was like, can you take my blood out, please, and put them in these vials? And so they did that, and I had to FedEx it back to Kansas City. And the first FedEx I went to, they said, we don't actually handle biohazard material, so you're going to have to go somewhere else. So I'm running around downtown Chicago to all these different FedExes with like a box of my blood. But really, it was just once I found out that I was a match, like it felt very much like, yeah, this is happening. I felt extremely confident that this was all going to happen and that this was going to be the thing that David needed to be able to accomplish the dreams that he talked about so much, which made what came next really difficult, I think, for me, because I had so much confidence that everything was just sunshine and roses from here on out.
Would you want to take it forward? We're going to take a break in about 5 minutes, but who would feel more comfortable taking us to the next part of the story? Marissa or David? If you want to go there.
I'm
fine talking about it too. It just, like, we can go with ladies first if that's
okay.
If that's more, or
yeah.
Okay.
Or I can enjoy the drama roller coaster with you.
Well, step in if I get anything wrong. But so once we finally got all the approvals, I had also peed in a jug for 4 different 24-hour periods.
I remember you carrying that drug, that bug.
Yeah.
I was always you poor thing, having to carry this stupid thing all over the place.
The first time I did it, I was like, all right, I'm staying home all day so that I can pee in this jug. And by the fourth time, I had no shame. I literally took it to, I took it to a bridal shower with me because I was like, I don't know, I got to keep living life. But we get to donation day and, we both, go back into surgery at the same time and we come out and they say, everything went great. Everything's good. It's, you know, great job, everybody. And I think it was the very next day that the first complication occurred. Is that right, David?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we had about 1 day.
We had about 1 day. So what had happened was, actually, just a slight side note, is about 2 weeks before our donation day, they called me and said, we've got a kidney for you. And I said, oh, I know. It's in a girl named Marissa. they said, no, we've got another one. And it's from from a body of a person that's passed. Mm-hmm. And I at first was hesitant about even considering it because I did know that Marissa is the kind of person that this has been a dream of hers. She didn't know how she was going to do it. She didn't know who she was going to do it for, but she told me even when she was a teenager, one of her things was that she was going to at some point give a kidney to someone. She thought that that was a gift that she really wanted to do. And I didn't want to take that from her, but I also did not want to cause her the pain of having to go through surgery. So at first I said yes to this other kidney. I went down to Kansas City, which is about an hour and 15 minutes away from where I live. And I was there for 24 hours, only to find out at the 22nd hour that the kidney was not viable.
Oh.
And so very frustrated and upset, came back and called Marissa back and said, would you still give me your kidney? Because it looks like I don't have one. So then, as she said, we went through the process and did it. It was on the, I started urinating, which is, a thing for, because I had stopped completely. I started urinating immediately. They said almost on the surgical table, I started urinating, which was a very good sign. That next day, the 24 hours later, the urination went from, became less and less, and then kind of stopped. And they didn't know why and didn't know why. And you were kind of, doing all the tests, that the post-surgical tests that they do. Mm-hmm. And they came in and said, okay, what has happened is when we put the kidney in your, into your body, when it filled up, it flipped over.
Oh my.
And so it flipped onto one of the arteries that was giving it the blood that it needs. So we need to go back in and correct that. They went in to correct that and the kidney went to sleep, which for your folks that don't know, just means that the kidney's still viable. They're just waiting for it to kind of realize what its job is to do. And so Marissa, you know, got better. Marissa went home. I went into recovery because I hadn't been walking or standing for the entire time that we went into this process and the two surgeries. So I had to go into rehab to kind of re-steady myself and walking and all that. I went through rehab for 2 weeks. I came home. I started having a fever and we went into the hospital and they said, I went into my local hospital here in Topeka and they said, we have to fly you to St. Luke's. Something's wrong. So I got helicoptered to St. Luke's. I was at St. Luke's for about 2 hours when they realized that one of the arteries had been ruptured. Oh my God. And I lost about 8 units of blood before having emergency surgery on the kidney.
Wow.
So that was about a month and like 7 days after the donation. And on the 9th day, they informed me that the kidney had lost too much blood for too long and was no longer viable.
Wow. So you stayed there in the hospital where they had for a period of time before going home?
I stayed in the hospital, yeah, for a pretty good time, in trying to get home, back home, and went through dialysis, started dialysis again. And it was about that time in the hospital that they realized that there was a small sore on my right calf. And at first they thought it was gangrene. And so they started medication for it and it just wasn't responding. And it was getting worse and it was getting worse. And the infection started covering my leg and started showing up on the left side of my leg. And it was about that time that I couldn't stay in the hospital any longer, but I couldn't go home. So I had to go into a center, rehab, retirement center, I don't know what you want to call them. Mm-hmm. And I was in there trying my best to get better, you know, at least to get to the point where I could go back home and be back on dialysis and whatever and start the whole process again. It was at that time that one of the nurses that was in the center that I was in said, you know, we noticed that this infection is not getting better. And I don't know how to tell you this, but I think you may have a very, very rare disease called calciphylaxis. She said, I don't know. I can't really tell you all the benefits for it, but she said it has a very high mortality rate. And before she walked out of my room, she said, you may want to get your affairs in order. So I went into shock.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a whole lot. And so the calciphylaxis kept getting worse and worse. I ended up having to go into another center. The calciphylaxis is a disease that happens to 1 in 0.4% of people. So lucky me. And it flares up in people with kidney disease. It also has a tendency to happen more often in African Americans. And high blood pressure and a couple of other things.
You're an amazing person just in the time we had so far, and we're going to continue the conversation. Is it okay if we take a break for a minute and then we're going to come back. We're going to take a commercial break.
Knowing Marissa for at least for this situation with what all the stuff that happened for me, it was harder that I knew who Marissa was. And I knew that it was something that Marissa wanted to do. And I knew it truly was a gift that she was giving. I felt horrible. And I remember when we finally, discovered that it wasn't going to work and that they had to take the kidney out. Marissa came to visit me in my hospital room, and I remember crying and bawling and wailing to her that I was so sorry. I was so sorry that I ruined her gift. It was like someone gave you this incredible, priceless thing, and I had it for a month and 10 days. And she was telling me it's okay. But that was one of the hardest parts in the start of this whole roller coaster, was that I thought that someone I knew cared for me enough to do this for me, and it didn't work. That was very, very frustrating for me.
I hope we get to talk personally again, just, so much more I want to share, but I want to get, I totally feel that and can only imagine, that feeling of, what you're saying. I'm holding back. But I was sorry if I'm not being so natural. I wanted to ask you if you could, it's hard for me to share like where you are now in terms of your health and your update physical, and status, okay. Health status.
From 2019 to 2000, to the summer of 2021, I had to be in a care facility. In 2020, they informed me that because of the calciphylaxis and the infections in my legs, that I would have to have a double amputation below the knee. And so July of 2020, I had both of my legs amputated, and then had, to kind of start that long process. The calciphylaxis makes it very hard for large wounds to heal for me. So there were, it was a good another 6 months of me before my nubs, as I call them, my amputations were fully healed enough. And then we started a process of trying to start with prosthetics. I have the prosthetics. I do not use the prosthetics very often because I don't like going slow, and there's just a lot of reasons. In 2021, I got the opportunity to come out of that center. I moved into a wheelchair accessible apartment complex of my own. Where I live, I take care of myself. I do all my own cooking. I do all my own cleaning for the most part. My mother's going to hear that and say, no, he doesn't. I still am doing dialysis. Dialysis now is a daunting aspect. It's one thing when you're on dialysis and there is that hope of having the
the kidney transplant. It's another thing to do dialysis when you know that you are going to have to do dialysis from now on. And the calciphylaxis makes me unviable for a second kidney transplant possibility. So yeah, that's where I'm at.
I appreciate, you know, you for sharing so candidly everything. And I know that it's just the first time I'm meeting you, but there's a lot, I have a lot of love for you, you know, and for you, for all of you, for Marissa and for all of her wonderfulness and Bryce. And that's why I kind of really, if it's okay, can you share your dream and what it is that is your dream for your life and for what you're working on with Bryce? And I know Marissa is one of your biggest supporters.
I am, like I said, I've always been someone who cooks. I have friends that call me a chef, but I always decline that. I'm a fat kid that loves food. And as a fat kid that loves food, I have always enjoyed the idea of cooking. And just for the simple fact that it is something that brings people together. One of my biggest things has always been that I would tell people that if you can eat some really boring food in your life and be healthy and quite successful. For example, Marissa's husband, Kuzer, he several years ago lost like 115, 120 some pounds. And I don't think that entire year and a half that I knew him while he was in that transition, did I see him eat anything other than spinach, grilled chicken, and ranch dressing. To me, that was, I was just saying that if you think of food as an art form, it's the only art form out there that uses all five of your senses. And I think that's a great aspect. And I like bringing people together. I love that food is nostalgic. There's nothing better than you smelling something in a house, a restaurant, in a outside that will immediately take you to a memory. Mine is apples. If I smell apples, Jonathan apples, for example, cooking, I think of my grandmother making apple cobbler when I was a kid, and it'll take me back immediately to smell that. So about a year ago, I just out of boredom and not wanting to just sit around and think about how everything wasn't going my way, I contacted Hans, Bryce. I call him Hans. If you hear me say Hans, it's because not because I'm naming someone else. I just don't know what the child's real name is. I contacted him and I said, let's play a game. Let's act like we're going to open a food joint. And let's figure out a logo. Let's play with a menu, just something to do. And we kept going into it and kept going into it. And I started getting surprised at how serious Bryce was. He would contact me almost every day. I've got a logo. Here's the logo. This looks good. Hey, if we use these colors, should we do that? And I was like, oh, this kid is serious. I guess it's time for me to get on board with him. And so we came up with Scroggies. Topeka, Kansas is the, you know, of course the state capital, but we do not have a lot of mom and pop shops. We are a chain restaurant city and always have been. And one thing we do not have is Cajun and Creole food. I have an uncle who has lived in New Orleans for about 30 years. And I have referred to myself as the adopted Cajun.
That's amazing. My family's from New Orleans.
So
it's another connection.
Yeah, I fell in love with the food down there. So Scroggie's is, we call it Southern Comfort, but it is kind of basic down bayou stuff. It's gumbo and jambalaya and po' boys and a couple of things that I've kind of made up, like fried cheese grit balls and fried collard green rolls. Yeah, and so now it's just a process of making it a reality. We came to the conclusion that a brick and mortar just might take a little bit more insurance-wise and money-wise. And so at first we were in this horrible idea that maybe this wasn't gonna happen. And once again, being my technical specialist, Hans came to me and he goes, I found a food truck, a guy that owns a food truck in Canada and he's in a wheelchair. And I was like, I didn't know that was possible. And so now that's what we're trying to do, is create a wheelchair accessible food truck for me to basically do what I've always loved, which is feeding people with a food that I've always loved in an area that I think could use it.
I think it's amazing. When Marissa, I said in the beginning, I don't know if, about coming across Marissa on TikTok, and I just a few weeks ago just started TikTok. I didn't ever thought I'd be on TikTok, and she was one of the first videos that I saw. And she said, "How do you say that, Fleur-de-lis? You know, the Fleur-de-lis."
The Fleur-de-lis. Right?
And I immediately thought, "Well, you must be from New Orleans." I used to live in New Orleans, and my whole family's from New Orleans, so I would be eating, you know, shrimp po' boys and jambalaya and all that. So I was like drawn to that too, you know. Being that fat kid who loved the food and grew up in New Orleans, you know, lived in New Orleans. So, and you lived in Topeka? I'm like, Topeka. Okay. But I mean, what an amazing idea. And I wanted to ask Bryce, Hans or Bryce, if he could sort of just say, what do we need to do to make this happen, to help you make it happen?
Yeah, sure. So we do have a website right now, scroggies.wixsite.com/scroggies. And we also have a Facebook called Scroggy Southern Comfort. And if you go on there on our website, you can find a link to our GoFundMe, where we're trying to raise funds to make this wheelchair accessible food truck happen. And right now we're trying to stair step our way up to this food truck because we're having to completely build it from scratch. And I'm working with a food truck manufacturer based in Florida, actually, to try and make this happen. And so right now we're trying to raise enough money to kind of begin some food fundraisers potentially, and kind of get the taste for Scroggies out there to everyone and start stair-stepping our way up to this food truck idea. And so on our Facebook and on our website, we're keeping everyone 100% up to date on what we're doing, every step we're taking, and we're excited. We're ready to do this.
It's awesome. All the information will be in the show notes, so people can just look, you know, at the end and a couple after the listening, or they can see that. I think it's just such a beautiful, wonderful idea. And David, you're such a beautiful person, you know, and then to be able to share this gift that you have for wanting to feed people and the cooking, this very unique menu, which is like, you know, dear to my heart because growing up in New Orleans or living in New Orleans. And what would be the timetable in terms of like being able to make this a reality, assuming the funding is all in place?
We would love to celebrate next year's Mardi Gras with a food truck.
Amazing. So 1 year. It's Mardi Gras tomorrow.
It's
Mardi Gras
today.
Today, I mean, today, yeah. I'm sorry. My birthday was yesterday, and today is Mardi Gras, yeah. And
how appropriate.
Yeah. And my friend, you know, he stopped by my house and said he's on his way to Galveston, Texas. Did I want to go to Mardi Gras? Do I want to go with him a few days ago? And it's still tough for, you know, being immunocompromised, like after the transplant, to be able to just do that kind of thing. So I was really like torn, but wasn't really
now did you have to restrict yourself even more with COVID happening?
Yeah, I mean, it was devastating for me. For a lot of people, it was devastating, but I mean, for me, because being on immunocompromised and going, I had the critical follow-up and then went right into the pandemic. And so I was basically sequestered. Just recently started to go out and to try to share my story. And I spoke at a high school and a church and I did a book talk and stuff. So yeah, that was a lot of holding back, but go ahead, Dave.
The pandemic for me was super hard just because all of this, you know, with the calciphylaxis and the kidney failure and then the removal of my legs, I was in a place that my family and friends couldn't come to. There were several times in hospitals, I got lucky enough at a couple of them to be on the first floor, and my friends and family had to come see me through a window. And I would always tell them, you know, I felt like a bear at the zoo, that everybody, you know, came and, you know, like, let's give him treats. Let's see if he'll tap on the window for us. The pandemic was especially hard just because I could not get to, you know, I wanted a hug from someone I knew so bad. Yeah. That at one point, I remember she gave me a hug when I know she wasn't supposed to, you know, they weren't supposed to really be touching us. And that one hug, I will still remember that nurse for like the rest of my life, because she was proxy. She was proxy for my mom and for my friends and, you know, for my family that I couldn't hug. And she just kind of let me hug her for several minutes. It was not, COVID was hard for people in so many ways,
but yes,
when the isolation of that was pretty intense for me.
I imagine you were in a facility where everyone around you was going through that same thing as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, like when I was at the Topeka Center, you know, they were shutting it down. They wouldn't, for a while there, they weren't even letting people bring stuff in to us. Like they couldn't bring food, they couldn't bring other items because they weren't sure how, at that point, they weren't sure how COVID was being transferred. And so they were just taking precautions on top of precautions.
Your journey has been so, so heartbreaking in many ways, but triumphant that you're here with us, you know, and that you have your beautiful voice. Do you still sing?
I do still sing. I actually got to do my first show last fall, returning to the stage in my chair, of course. But it was the first time since the loss of my legs. We found a little bit part in the show, and it was kind of nice to be able to get back on stage and be the natural ham that I am.
Yeah, I mean, you have a great sense of humor. You just like, you know, I would wish I could just hang around with you. I don't know if you'd want to hang around with me, but I would be, once you open the food truck, I know I'm going to have to find a way to come to Topeka, right?
There you go.
Yeah, but I really, in these last minutes here, I'd love to have you come back again to talk, and it's like unlimited, you know, with updates, or come back and either talk privately or even come back and do another podcast, you know, to raise more awareness. But you, it's going to be amazing in a year from now that you're going to have this food truck and that you'll be able to start to share this amazing food with your community. Do you already have when you have the food truck, is it going to be stationed somewhere, like in a certain spot, or are you going to be mobile, or is it going to be that kind of thing like that?
We'll most likely be mobile, but I would like to kind of be in one spot that, you know, people just kind of generally know that's where I'm at.
And what else? Are you going to have this, like, someone that's just helping you? Are you going to have a staff?
Yeah, he probably doesn't want it to be this way, but Hans will be stuck in there with me.
What do you think of that? What are you doing now, Hans? Bryce, what are you doing now?
I'm kind of working on this full time for him. But I love cooking just as much as David does. And so it'll be interesting to learn his methods when he teaches me.
That's good. And Marissa, where do you live now, Marissa?
So So I have been living in Kansas City for the past few years, but I am in the process of moving back to Topeka.
Oh.
So I'll be bothering David, you know, probably every day of the week once this is up and running. Yeah. But Jay, I did want to share with you, you actually tattled on me because I'm a fairly private person. I'm not someone that would usually share something on TikTok like that.
I apologize.
No, you're fine. It was just funny. I can't get past that feeling that I had when we found out we were a match and how strange it was, because like you said, you had a room full of 100 people, with many people testing to see if there were matches. And I just can't get past the feeling that like my connection with David is not over. And so knowing that this is the next step in his journey, I just felt like I didn't have a choice but to share, but to try to share what this next step is and how excited I am for him. And so I posted this TikTok, and then David said, "Marissa, this guy contacted me. I don't know how he knows anything about you." And I go, "Oh no, I know." And so I had to tell him.
Oh, so you didn't know. So no one, Bryce didn't, Han/Bryce didn't know anything.
No, David and I were trying to figure out how you got a hold of us and how you knew about us.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean,
the word got out.
I mean, for any word that I can pass along, I mean, this should be a national story, international. You know, I mean, I think hope is the beginning of, I saw your TV spot that you did. I guess it was like on a local PBS channel that you were interviewed.
Yeah.
And I saw that. So it's just beginning now. Right. And it should only
just beginning. We're just kind of getting the ball rolling.
Yeah. It's awesome. Amazing. All three of you are great. You're just lifting me up. The journey is, I think, I just love the connection that you continue to be able to have, you know, in this process. And so can you maybe just share a little bit at the end here, because we're maybe coming to the end, David, like, how are you feeling now? Like, how is this all, you know, what's going on in your mind now?
I, you know, it's a roller coaster. There are days where I'm like, let's get this done. There's post-dialysis days where I'm like, I must be out of my mind. But it is always amazing to when I realize the amount of support that I have. People like Hans and Marissa, I just, some people, you know, get one or two of those kind of people in your life. And I'm surrounded by it. You know, it's really taken this community to raise this crazy child that I am. And I find myself to be incredibly blessed by that. And even when I'm having my low days and my weak days and my doubtful days, inevitably one of them or two of them or all of them will come back with some, oh no, this is getting done. No, we're doing great. You know, this is amazing. We're having fun. And I don't know where I would be without it. Oh, I know where I'd be. I'd be dead. But it's good to be supported.
It's not a surprise that people would be rallying around you. You have such a magnetic personality, sense of humor, you know, your character in all the right ways. That's the stylish headphones too. I mean, you know, it's amazing. But I want to thank you all for taking the time. It's a, what do you say it's an open invitation to come back and give updates. I hope that it'd be possible to stay personally in touch with you.
That would be
David,
awesome.
You know, that would be great. And so for everyone listening, be sure to look down at the show notes for all the points of access, right, to Facebook and the website and everything, and all those points, right, Han? They'll be able to click and be able to find where to donate, support. I don't think it's going to take long. People are going to
spread the word.
Yeah, spread the word. Yeah. And to share. I used to always say, you know, could you share my story? Right. So they can share, 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 share. on Facebook, and we're going to encourage them to do that. Marissa, you're amazing. And I think what you did, even though they, up until this point, they didn't know about the TikTok, or just that after I right to this
after
point,
you contacted them.
Oh, after, okay.
I had to come clean.
I have to say that the kidney, you know, I'm just new on TikTok for a few weeks, but the kidney community is amazing on TikTok. And so I'm going to keep, you know, sharing and posting, and you have to have 1,000 followers on TikTok to do live. And so then once that happens, like you were talking on the thing, I'd be able to have a larger megaphone to ask other influencers to share that. And I think a lot of people, if I can just do that something in my small way to, you know, have other people to use their platform. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today. And Bryce Hans, thank you for, you know, being here too. And Marissa, you're amazing. I mean, I always say kidney donors are my favorite people in the world. And because I was involved in starting to encourage other people on their journeys, I've gotten to meet and know a lot of people. And it's true though. I mean, so you're a role model. You all three are role models in different, you know, in your own way.
Thank you for listening to Jay's Real World Podcast. Thank you, Marissa, David, and Bryce. Please take a look again at the show notes for the link to the website for Scroggie's Southern Comfort Food, the GoFundMe page to support this incredible person, David Scroggins, and his partner, Bryce Finkelday, and Marissa, who is also supporting the mission. Incredible person. And we are looking forward to a year from now hearing that the food truck is ready to go and Southern Comfort Food will be in full force in Topeka, Kansas. Thank you for listening. Take care. See you soon.